Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Hermetics in the Golden Dawn with David Griffin and other Golden Dawn adepts. I am your host, Julia Sherrod. Today, we will be continuing our discussion on ceremonial magic in the Golden Dawn with, once again, our special guest, Thomas Stoschwitz. Some of the topics we will be hoping to further elaborate on to discuss today are ceremonial magic and how it is used for gaining knowledge with our holy guardian angel, the relationship between the Emerald Tablet and magic. We will further explore ritual props and aids and how they are used within the Golden Dawn system and with ceremonial magic. We will be discussing astrological timing, the hierarchies, the differences between invocation and evocation, the consecration of physical objects, talismans, and implements. If we have time, we have a lot. This is going to be a lot of information to try and squeeze into an hour. If we have time, we'll also discuss energetic manipulation of the aura, scrying, traveling in the spirit vision, astral traveling, all that other stuff. So thank you, everybody, who has tuned in once again. And thank you once again, Thomas, for being here this week.
Thank you very much, Julia.
So if you could just, again, for people who may not be familiar with who you are, if they have not had a chance to listen to part one of this discussion of ceremonial magic within the Golden Dawn system, could you please introduce yourself once again to our listeners?
Yes, I am a ceremonial magician since 15 years now, and an initiate and student of the Golden Dawn, the same time amount. And I've been involved in spirituality since early 90s, more or less.
If you don't mind me asking, what drew you to the Golden Dawn?
Well, I found it quite early in my spiritual quest.
Mm-hmm.
I was drawn in the beginning to the New Age movement, but I found the books of Aleister Crowley and Isidore Gavadien, and also read some introductory books about paranormal phenomena, and I stumbled upon Golden Dawn symbolism, and I just fell in love with it immediately. So it's my first love, and it still is there.
Fantastic. Okay, so to get right down to business, because we have a lot to cover, and an hour, as you have said, really is not enough time, and it really isn't. So hopefully we can get as much as it done today, and if not, then we will do a part three in this series. So
sure.
We're going to start off, first of all, with continuing our discussion. Last week, we briefly touched on ritual props and aids that a ceremonial magician within the Golden Dawn would use, such as the dagger and the chalice and pentacle. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
Yes, and the wand, and am I missing one? I think I am.
I think so. Well, basically, the implements that we use in the outdoor, with the exception of the banishing daggers that I mentioned,
mm-hmm.
all the three wands and the elemental weapons are actually the ritual props of the adept. But they are already introduced to the outer world now since the Reformation. But they are accordingly consecrated on a new level of working when one enters adeptship in the Adeptus Minor grade. So basically, the elemental wand is actually a wand that is a winged globe wand. They actually, these three wands that I mentioned, they are taken from Egyptian mythology. So there is the winged globe wand, and there is the phoenix wand, and the lotus wand. So the winged globe wand is correspondent with the elements, and the phoenix wand with the seven planets, and the lotus wand with the 12 signs of the zodiac. So when one enters the Adeptus Minor, then one make those wands into those Egyptian tools and consecrate them accordingly.
And how would one go about consecrating these? I'm assuming you have a specific ritual that
yes,
aids
yes.
in the consecration?
Yes, in the outer order, we have a quite easy, light version, one can call it, of a consecration, or a not that complex version. When one uses the invoked forces, for example, when one invokes, when also juniors, you work with the earth element, and then you consecrate the black band on the elemental wand. So you use those forces that you have invoked, and you invoke them again over this black band, and you consecrate the force, concentrate the force into that black band. So you project the force, you can call it,
mm-hmm.
And you again do a full invocation, but over this symbol. So after that, it is consecrated to this force, and you can use it to that end. Next time you invoke Earth, then you use the wand. Invoking us, and so forth through the whole lineage. And then when one enters into the second order as Adeptus Minor, then one consecrates all these three wands again, but as an Adeptus Minor in a synthesis, one can call it.
What's the time difference? Like how much more time does it take when you're going through the outer order grades to consecrate the different tools and aids and implements as compared to the ritual once you get into the inner order?
Well, the consecration ceremony is basically the standard invocation of the earth, and then one has an intention of consecrating the wand, and then one just do a... If you're asking about the difference between an ordinary invocation and a consecration, but maybe 15 minutes more, because
okay.
Invocation and the banishing and all comes around all that, it takes quite a long time in itself. So the consecration is actually the what can say the climax of the ritual. So it's quite It takes doesn't take that long to consecrate, but it takes long to invoke the force and have it in your temple and in your aura. Of course, if it's invoked into your aura.
Okay.
And then it's projected out to the implement.
Okay, and what about talismans?
It's the same system about that. When you go out through the outer order, you consecrate the band to the different ones, and then you also consecrate a talisman to the force. And it's exactly the same ritual, but it's different implements just. So you can use the talisman for different purposes than the wand. The wand is just made for invoking force, but the talisman has much broader use. You can use it to healing, you can use it into anything that is connected. For example, the earth element, it's connected to different purposes traditionally. And the air talisman, for example, is very useful for healing, example, because earth is connected to sickness. And so forth. So talismans has more broader use compared to a wand.
Now, are these talismans created as initiates within the Golden Dawn and the Outer Order as they're working through their elemental grades? Are these talismans created during that process, or is it something that the adept learns once they reach the inner order?
No, one learns this already in the outer, but one doesn't use the talisman into miracle working. You don't use talismans to create changes in the outer, because that takes the focus from the theoretical aim with magic. But you consecrate these talismans, and they are used as symbols, as what we call flashing tablets. So you can use it, for example, for astral projection and describing the spirit vision that we'll go into a little bit later. And when you You can also use flashing tablets when you consecrate all other implements into the same force. So they're basically a symbol that you consecrate. But as a philosopher, the last degree of the outer order, then you start using talisman into creating intentions to create the changes in the outer world or in yourself. You can use talismans to create psychological developments also. So it's, but you don't use that before you are quite adept in ritual magic.
Okay.
But you create the symbols and you consecrate them just to train yourself in that methodology.
Mm-hmm. But you actually don't use them in your daily ritual work. Maybe isn't the proper term.
No, exactly.
But you're not using them on an ongoing basis until you reach a certain grade. Even
yes, because yes, when you enter more senior levels in work, yes.
Okay, so you mentioned, as we were talking about the ritual aids and the props, you mentioned very, very briefly the different hierarchies. So let us start with the five elementals, and maybe you can discuss exactly what those are and how, like, tie them into the ritual props and aids, like, elaborate more so on that subject within the hierarchies.
Yes.
Starting
with
the five elements.
Yes. Well, we actually work mainly with four elements, and the fifth element is spirit or quintessence, and that is actually the synthesis of the four.
Okay.
So it's so when you invoke spirit, you actually invoke all the four elements in union in synthesis and under the guidance of spirit. What did you actually have in mind? What would you want more to know? How one uses ritual together with hierarchy?
Well, I'm more of, because each of the outer order grades, they're tied into the elemental hierarchy, are they not?
Yes.
You start off with a neophyte, and that's when you learn the lesser banishing ritual and the other banishing, and do you also learn the middle pillar?
Yes, exactly.
That first part, so we discussed how that helps the ceremonial magician clean their aura and work. Basically, it's an introduction to working with the Tree of Life.
Yes.
No?
Exactly.
Okay.
Yes, yes. And as a new fact, you just cleanse, one can say, your aura or an injected body. We call it sphere of sensation in Golden Notaries, but it's the same as the energetic body or the aura. So you purify and cleanse your aura with the banishings and the middle pillar ritual, and then you enter into the first elemental layer, which is corresponding to the earth. So working with elemental grades and elemental rituals as a student in the elemental grades, you invoke and you activate those forces into your aura and place them into your aura. Because according to the Golden Dawn philosophy, we all have these symbols or these aspects of the microcosm in our aura, but they're not that activated.
Okay.
They are more or less activated, but not in balanced disposition. And some are not activated fully and some are maybe too much. So it's, doing ceremonial magic is actually activating these forces that you invoke into your aura and place them into as symbols into your aura. So yes, basically,
okay.
If you simplify it.
So
this is a kind of energetic manipulation. Exactly as David talked about alchemism, kind of energetic manipulation. Ceremonial magic is also an energetic manipulation of your aura.
Okay, so you're basically, with the tools taught by the ceremonial magician, there's a lot of growth that happens in the outer order.
Yes.
Working through the elemental grades.
Yes, quite painstakingly, actually.
Quite quite. Well, I've heard stories, and I wanted to. It's kind of off topic, but at the same time, it's not. When you say painstaking, I've heard stories about some of the side effects that happen to the student of the Golden Dawn as they're working through those grades.
Yes.
For instance, people working with air sometimes become absent-minded. I've heard stories of people as they're going through earth become very tired and lethargic.
Yes.
Working through fire, having difficulty controlling temper, being overly passionate about things that they may
yes.
not necessarily be passionate about before they started working regularly with fire. With water being like just crying at the drop of the hat. These stories may scare some people off because it is a lot of work. People talk all the time, I feel like I'm stuck in mud. For how daunting can that be? And are there any tricks that you know of? I guess tricks is the wrong word, but it may be appropriate to help people when they reach those certain steps in their magical evolution to help
yes.
get through that?
It's very hard to describe exactly what one should do against those side effects, but you never can come around that because that is part of the initiatic process. In a way, I know that David doesn't like to make chemical comparisons with magic, but I do, so I will do it. Going through out order is quite similar to the alchemical stage of Nigredo, the black stage. You know, it's very much with separating. You know, into different aspects of you. Actually, you separate the different aspects of yourself. And you look into these aspects in detail. And when you do that, you also become a little bit unbalanced in a way when you do that. When you go into the airy grade, for example, you become very airy. But that is a necessary step to also gain knowledge of the element and the forces involved in that grade to become a little bit, you know, exaggerated in it. But and how to deal with excesses? Of course, magic is always about creating balance. That is the primary goal. But to gain this balance, you also have to go through stages where you're quite unbalanced, because you have to separate, and then you have to reintegrate. That is the basic alchemical process, and that is also, in my opinion, also seen in magic in generative process. So it's very individual. So I can't tell you exactly what one should do in each case because each and every student has their own tutor. And in my temple, I supervise all my students personally. So I meet them quite regularly and we talk about the process and I give them recommendations what to do with their work. Often we have used ritual methods to deal with the different side effects. So, but it's very hard to describe exactly. You know, you can't generalize that because it's very individual and very different between different persons. But every student is supervised under strict supervision and of an adept, and they are given different recommendations. So each path in the outer order, and of course also in the inner. But in the outer, it's very different. On the outside, they all do these prescribed workings, but there are also differences because each person is different.
Okay, so it's people are not thrown into these elemental grades and then basically told
and just left.
Yeah,
their own devices. No.
They have. It's kind of. I'm assuming then you have. Like, to say the Golden Dawn is a fraternity, you can't, a lot of people just glaze, like, use that term as all-encompassing, but there is actually a real sense of brotherhood, sisterhood that goes on, where
yes.
you do develop these really personal one-on-one relationships, do you not?
Yes, you do. And also different students find different brothers and sisters that they can also, you know, cry on their shoulders if they want. So they all, you know, create different networks. So besides the tutor, so there is lots of fraternal love and lots of shoulders to cry on. So and also become an initiate. That is the main reason to become an initiate into an order like the Golden Dawn, is that you are also protected in a way, in a quite substantial way actually, because you are not just initiated into the tradition and an order on the paper, but you're also initiated into the egregore, the group soul, of the temple, and that protects you.
Yes.
You're introduced to the different elements with the temple, and the Hierophant introduces you to the forces, and gives you dispensation, one can say, spiritually, to work with those. So it's compared with self-initiation, then you're totally on your own. And anything can happen there, but in an initiatic society, the temple introduces you and gives you dispensation spiritually to work with those forces. So there is lots of protection inherent in the system of initiation.
Yes.
And there is the tutor also.
Mm-hmm. Which is a great. You can pick up any book that may be available on the Golden Dawn and its rituals and its ceremony. However, a lot gets lost between that personal teacher-tutor relationship. There's certain things that you can only learn by actually... Study groups are fantastic, yes, but there's certain things that you will only greater benefit from forming those relationships between the teacher and the student. That's basically what you're getting to there.
Yes.
Yes.
I think the student and teacher relationship is very important, and in most cases it's actually the Hierophant. In our temple, it's always the Hierophant,
okay,
who is also the tutor. So one can compare. It's not the same, but one can compare initiation with psychotherapy, and you can have some comparisons between the therapist and the Hierophant,
mm-hmm.
and there is lots of transference going on there between both the Hierophant and the student, and that is also beneficial for the initiatory process. And you learn about your subconscious and unconscious, you know, the behavior and complexes and all that in that process. But we also always recommend our students to also have regular psychotherapy outside of the temple.
Okay, and
it's always good to have a second opinion.
Yes, it is. Okay, so the elements are out of order. What about the planets, working with the seven planets and
yes.
the energies from that? Is that something that happens once someone reaches the inner order? Or
no, also in the outer. So yes. Our students in the outer, they work with all the forces that is attributed to this, the elemental grade are correspondent to certain spheres on the tree of life. The lowest four are correspondent to Earth, but they also correspond to different forces. And for example, when you enter the Earth grade, you start to work with your first planet, because the second sephira, counting downwards, foundations it's called, it's correspondent to Luna. And then you have the higher aspect of Luna, or the shadow, overshadowing planet, which is Saturn. They are opposite ends on the hexagram symbol.
Mm-hmm.
So you work with those forces as key workers in the air element.
Okay. And two, with the 12 signs of the zodiac, do you start with
yes.
those as well?
Yes, exactly. Yes, yes, because the zodiac is elementally categorized. So again, working in the air element, you work also with the airy signs, like Libra, Aquarius, and so forth.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so astrological timing. How important
is... Perhaps I should just mention a little bit what those different hierarchy does with you.
Sure.
Because the four elements, they're very corporeal, of course. At least in the way that you invoke them, in our the elements are actually the first and last archetypes that exist. So they're actually everything. But just to simplify things, the four elements correspond with the lowest level of existence with Earth, the planet Earth, and the material surroundings that we live in. So of course, they are very much into creating changes in your physical body and the energetic body also. The planets, they are attributed to the passions, to the drives. Not the instincts, but to the drives, such as love and hate, creativity and intellectuality, all that. So you manipulate those aspects of yourself with planetary magic. And zodiacal magic is about the zodiac is actually 12 different personality types. So it's a basic outlook on your life that you have in your birth sign. So the goal is, of course, to balance yourself and place yourself in the center of the zodiacal wheel, the sun in the center. So so you use zodiacal magic to broaden your perspective on life, you can call it.
Okay.
Because you're both into a certain sign, like myself, I'm a Virgo, so I have the intellectual and analytical, with me. You know, I have to work with the other aspects of the zodiac. So that is what it is used for, basically.
How important is someone's astrological makeup when it comes to working with the elements and with the planets and with 12 signs of the zodiac? Do you, like, for instance, I am Capricorn and my ascendant is Scorpio. Some people place more emphasis on the sun. Some people place more emphasis on the rising sign. Some traditions place more emphasis saying that the moon actually. So my moon is in Aries. So depending on different traditions place different significances on some of those main personality planets. Does the Golden Dawn as a whole kind of take in someone's astrological chart into account when they're working with those three different phases?
Yes.
Okay.
Not that much in outdoor. It's working with your zodiacal or with your horoscope is more of the adept, to work with your karma. It's more of the adept work. But what you start a little bit to look into that in the outer. For example, when you again, if we talk about the airy grade of Turcus, which is correspondent with Luna, as I said before, and then you start to observe the lunar phases, for example, and you also observe how Luna in the chart affects you during ritual and all that. So yes, there is a little bit of that, but it becomes more of the level of adeptship working with that. But we use astrology to synchronize our rituals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when it's
astrological. Yes, exactly. So when you, for example, when you invoke Libra, the sign of Libra, then you, at least when you consecrate, this is connected to the consecration of implements. It's important to synchronize the ritual so that you have positive aspects, the harmonious planets in the horoscope when you work, which is harmonious to Libra, when you invoke Libra. So it's very important to have a good horoscope connected to Libra when you invoke and consecrate, for example, the Libra band on your zodiacal bond. So there you have it.
Yeah, so you'd want to, if you're working with Libra, you'd be wanting to work like on the specific day that corresponds with those currents, and even more specifically, the hour of that particular
yes.
planet that's associated
yes.
with what you're working with.
Yes, or you can invoke Libra when it ascends in the horizon also. So it's there are some also simpler methods, but it's, the optimal is to have the charge optimally for Libra invocation.
Okay. Now is it when you're just working, for instance, with those the elements and the planets and the zodiac, where astrological timing is important, or is astrological timing important for a broader sense in the Golden Dawn system? Would you use astrological timing for initiations as an example, or is it not as important for initiation?
Yes, you could use that, but it's often it's very impractical because the temple has they have an assembly of officers, so and people have to plan the calendar to come to the meetings. So it's very hard, difficult to adapt the temple meetings after each person's horoscope. It's very, but that is the, of course, if it could be made, it is it should. I'm not saying that it is unimportant, but often it is impractical.
Also,
I want to stress this. I said that ritual timing is very important when you consecrate implements,
mm-hmm.
because they are physical objects. So it's very important to when you work with very corporeal forces or corporeal intentions to use that. But when you work with theology, with your own personal development,
mm-hmm.
it's not that important.
It's just it's important that you're getting the personal work done. Yeah.
Yes, I think it's I would say that working in a theological outlook, it's more important when you feel coming from inside that now it is time to do that ritual, more than look into the church or when the elemental tides flow in the atmosphere and so forth. I think it's more important to have a more intuitive. But that is maybe more advanced level of working. But I would say that the intuitive aspect in theology is more important than to synchronize them with charge. When you consecrate, there's a difference.
We're about the time. Okay. Fantastic. Now we kind of touched.
So I did want to say that initiation is more of a theological. Aspect of working, so it's not that important.
Okay, well, that's understandable. Before we continue, I forgot to do this last week, and I must remember this week. If you would like to learn more about the HOGDAO, please visit their website at www.golden-dawn.com. You can also find us on YouTube. We have many, many instructional videos. Just search for Hermetic Golden Dawn, the user Hermetic Golden Dawn, all one word on YouTube. You can also find this show on Facebook and MySpace. On Facebook, you can find us at www.facebook.com/hermetic.golden.dawn. And you can also find us on MySpace, www.myspace.com/hermeticgoldendawn. We would love for you to become a friend of the show as well to get important reminders and updates of upcoming shows. If any of you have any questions as well, you have any topics that you would like us to discuss on the show, please feel free to email the show. There is a little email link. If you go to the main page, www.blogtalkradio.com/hermetic-golden-dawn. Okay, I think I covered everything this time. So let us move on to something we very, very briefly touched on last week that deserves more elaboration, and that is the differences between invocation and evocation. A lot of people seem to throw those two terms around synonymously, not really understanding what they mean. So let us start with, what is invocation?
Okay. Evocation is drawing force from higher aspects of yourself into the lower. So it's invocation. It's like in the word, you take in something into you. into your personality and into your aura. And you activate it and you place it there in the aura. Evocation is drawing forth. So it's evocation. So invocation is about taking down from up, from levels above you. It is very symbolical now, but it's not actually. It's more about taking things from the inner to the outer with invocation. So, but when you evoke something, you take it, you evoke the repressed, like I said in the last show. I view the demonic sides of myself as the repressed sides of myself, the complexes and all that. So when I evoke something, I take it out from myself and place it outside myself.
Okay.
And this is the protective aspect of evocation. You create a circle around you, and you outside the circle you have the triangle of art, which is it's called. And you with ritual and evocation, you take this aspect, this demon inside of you. To simplify it, you can call it demon. You take it outside you and you place it in a triangle, and then you watch it there.
Okay.
And you learn about it. And in that protective way, you integrate it into yourself.
Okay.
So invocation is invoking into you from something higher, and evocation is calling forth from something lower aspect of yourself into the outside.
Okay.
Yeah,
so.
Basically.
So when you're working with the elements and the planets and the zodiac, you're invoking those within your sphere?
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Absolutely.
The evocation would be goetic magic, as an example.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. It the goetic magic is actually more attributed to the zodiacal aspect of evocation.
Okay.
It works with the deacons, the 36 deacons of the zodiac, and actually even you can divide each deacon into two parts. So it's actually quite a lot of them. 72. So that is the zodiacal. But we also work in the inner order. We also work with the elemental and planetary, and also with the sephirotic aspects also.
Okay. And how would this translate to with working with one's holy guardian angel or higher genius?
Yeah, okay.
And those different aspects.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. Like you said, the holy guardian angel is a poetic and name to for our higher or divine genius,
mm-hmm.
the true self. The higher self, but that is not the same as God. So that is why we call it angel. So it's an emissary for the divine, the highest divine forces.
Okay.
So in the Golden Dawn, at least, paradigm, we viewed that it is very, very difficult for a human, incarnated human person to know God directly, face to face. So God uses his angels to communicate with us, and the angel is the divine spark, you can call it.
Mm-hmm.
But the experience of the Holy Ghost is very similar to said with the divine experience, but it is not the ultimate experience.
Okay.
And it's the first. You can call it that is. The knowledge and conversation with the Holy Guardian Angel is the first important goal to have in magic. When you go through the outer order, you consecrate and you purify and balance your aura, so that it can receive the divine forces, the light into you. So you have to clean the cup before you can pour into the wine into it. You know, so that is basically the outer order work. To prepare yourself for this knowledge and conversation. So when you enter the first level of inner order, the Adeptus Minor brain, you're supposed to have this knowledge and conversation of the Holy Guardian Angel. But that is not the same as union with the Guardian Angel.
Okay.
It's the first meeting, you can call it. And how that is accomplish and experience is very different, very individual. Sometimes one is given a name, so you can use that name when you invoke your holy guardian angel later, or you can be given a symbol. Some people interpret it like being aware of your mission in life, the meaning with your special life, what you should accomplish in your life. And that is a knowledge and conversation with the Holy Guardian Angel. So it's a very broad definition. And it's very personal, and very individual. And it's very hard to tell anybody that so and so and so you have to experience to become a knowledge and conversation, because it's a very personal experience. But it is an awareness of some kind of your higher self.
Okay, so you don't have one specific ritual that that aids in this communion, that aids in this contact?
Basically, the initiation ritual into the Adeptus Minor produces that effect often, but not always. But it has that goal.
Okay.
But we are given
Continue.
Yeah, but there are secret formulas in the order that I can't tell here on the show, but they are specific, very complex and time consuming and arduous rituals that are supposed to produce this effect. Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I understand. There's some things you cannot discuss, and I would never ever expect you to even discuss something, especially that you have to keep quiet to avow.
Yes. It's
very, very important for systems such as these. There's certain things that, unless you have the knowledge, you really shouldn't be. It's to protect people. No, some people may think, even this is kind of off topic, but in the way it's important, there are some people who view these vows of secrecy, of silency, as archaic and no longer necessary in our day and age of information and enlightenment. Some people like to throw that term around, but I want to stress, at least this is in my opinion, those vows, they're not there to repress people. They're there to safeguard. Are they not?
Yes, safeguard the initiate, actually, because if you use those formulas too early, they can damage you. Basically, that is the main reason, to protect the initiate and the student, because all these things are taken in steps.
Yes.
And then most of the workings that we use in the outer order are published. We use them a little bit differently, and maybe which is unique. But you can find most of what we do in the outer order in published literature. But very much what we use in the inner order is unpublished, and it should be that way, because it's like I said in the first show, there are lots of room to mistakes in the outer, but when you enter the second order, there are less room for mistakes.
Because the energies you're working with, you're much more in tune with them, are you not?
Yes.
You're
more things at stake. Yes.
Yes. How does the Emerald Tablet? Because when David Griffin was on the show, we had discussed the Emerald Tablet. I want to kind of bring it up a little bit further. How the Emerald Tablet plays a role within the life of a ceremonial magician within the Golden Dawn system.
Yes, basically it's the first line in the Emerald Tablet that is very important in ceremonial magic. That which is above is also below, and that which is below is also above. So that can be interpreted in different ways. It can mean different levels, higher and lower levels, but it can also mean the outer or the outer and the inner, or the difference between man, the microcosm, and the world, the macrocosm. And that is what I would like to stress in this show, with this Emerald Tablet, that magic is about in the Golden Dawn, we view the sphere of sensation, the aura, as a mirror, a reflection of the macrocosm. For example, Earth has an also an own aura and a magnetic field, and it has an atmosphere and so forth. And when you watch, when you stand upon Earth, you will see all these constellations, and we'll see the traveling or the moving the stars, and you, of course, you stand on the elements. And this has equivalent also in yourself. So, like I said, all these symbols and all these forces are already present in your aura. So you have the constellations around you, like in the reflection of the greater world. Mm-hmm. So magic is very much to becoming in tune with the outer world, making your zodiac in tune with the bigger zodiac and so forth. So it's magic is about union of the macrocosm and the microcosm.
Okay.
Like it is a union of the self and the higher self.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very much union with the lesser and the greater. Yes. So
okay.
and that translates also into the law of correspondences that we use in magic.
Okay. And how does that? And then I'm assuming then the high and the low and the above and the below. That first line, does that play into how scrying and astral projection and different forms of divination play into the Golden Dawn system, how those are integrated within the Golden Dawn and ceremonial magic?
Yes.
How?
Yes, nope. Continue.
No, you continue.
It's... Scrying in the spirit region, which is what we call astral projection in the Gondwana.
Okay.
I mainly view upon scrying in the spirit region as a travel into yourself, but it can also become a travel outside yourself into the macrocosm. So in the astral, these two aspects of outer and inner are fused. They are not that rigid. All these boundaries are not that perfectly clear in the astral. So the subjective and the objective merge much more. But when I do scrying, I usually interpret what I experience as something as like in dream experience, dream interpretation and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
So there's two different kinds of the projection can call it. It's the scrying and the traveling in the spirit region. Scrying is actually just looking into your aura and the reflections on it.
Okay.
So you're not actually traveled to the point or the plane that you want to have a communication with. But it more is that it comes to you and you see the reflection on a symbol. But that can also, with time and experience, that can actually become a real projection. And in the Golden, we say that I have forgot the word. I know I'm in Swede, so I have something English escapes me. It's a ray becomes projected into that part of existence, and then it becomes traveling, a projection, and then suddenly the vision becomes very, very much vivid and three-dimensional and much more colorful and more real.
Okay.
So it's one starts with scrying, looking into the plane, but then it becomes a traveling, a projection. But that takes quite some experience and training.
Mm-hmm. We're going to at some point discuss the Kabbalah, but I'm wondering, because you work with Tarot in the Outer Order quite a bit and divination, do part of your Tarot, I've heard this and I'm not quite sure if I understand it correctly, I've heard that you use scrying for some of your tarot meditations, that say if you're working with the arcana, like you will, or even fire, like meditating upon the fire triangle and actually scrying, like projecting yourself within those images and kind of walking around through the images and keeping a note of things that you see to help you become more in tune with those specific elements and planets and all that other stuff. How does that work? Like, how can you explain that so it makes more sense to somebody that may not understand how you can pick up an image and or look at a tarot card and walk through it to better understand? Because the imagery that's used within the deck is very important, is it not? They're not just pretty pictures for one to look at.
No, they mainly used for meditation and scrying and spirit vision, and also for divination, of course, but more used in magical contexts, in when you invoke and you use it as a portal to enter that plane. Well, basically, you look at the symbol, at least in the outer order. We use a little bit more simplified system. We don't use that much tarot pictures in the outer order because that is too complex. It's reserved for the adepts more. But when you use a symbol, of course you can watch on it, and then you close your eyes and you do a guided visualization, you can say, to activate the senses on the astral, the five senses, but in the astral. So you hear something, you smell something, and you touch, just to become acquainted with the astral, and then you see a door with that symbol upon it, and you walk towards this door and you open it, and then you lose the control, and then you enter into the door, and then you let spontaneously visions come into what's happened. But that often doesn't leave the scrying stage. It often is a reflection.
Okay.
But it can eventually, it will become actual projection and traveling into that. But we experience this. When we experience the vision, it's always done as a travel, but it doesn't necessarily mean that we actually travel on that plane. It can also be that we receive images into our soul from outside. But basically, it's about activating your astral senses or your imaginary senses, and you enter a door or a portal. And you enter into it, and you experience spontaneous visions.
Okay.
It's quite simple.
Yeah, it sounds complicated, and it may sound daunting, but I guess if you actually just sit down and do it, it is simple. You need to get over that mental block of, what do you mean I can travel inside these images? It's more a lot of things that hold back somebody. A lot of it is mental, is it not? When it comes ceremonial magic.
Of course, I remember when I was a neophyte and in the temple that initiated me in Sweden, which David was a hierophant. He was my hierophant, David Griffin, and I was very unsure about my ability to scry and have astral vision. So he just told me, sit down on the chair. Okay, I did, and I relaxed everything, and then he just walked me through the initiatory the stages, and then he told me just speak what you experience, and I suddenly started to speak quite a lot. So it's just sometimes you have to have a teacher maybe to help hold your hand and go through that threshold that you create on yourself. Because you're insecure.
Yes. We have a question from one of our listeners in chat. They want to know, how do you know if you're seeing inside the macrocosm versus the microcosm? How would you know the difference?
It becomes... I would say that it becomes much more vivid.
Okay.
And objective compared to scrying. It's quite two-dimensional, and it isn't that much of a difference between when you mentally create images It's just that it also have spontaneous, it's like daydreaming, but suddenly it becomes very vivid and alive, like in a dream.
Okay.
So sometimes our dreams can be quite unreal, but sometimes our dreams can be very real and intense. And I think that is a difference between an objective experience and a subjective, simply subjective experience.
It'd be kind of like I have many dreams where I wake up and I can feel if someone's touched me in the dream, I feel like on my body, I feel like someone's actually laid their hands on me, or I can smell the smells, or so that's basically, if you've ever had that type of very lucid, vivid dream, it's the same principles between, when it comes to identifying the difference between macro and microcosm?
Yes, I would say so, yes. To simplify
okay,
it, yes.
Yeah, simplify. We're trying, some people may think we're simplifying it too much, but for people who are completely foreign to the Golden Dawn, there may be some of these concepts that they're not quite familiar with. So I'm not wanting to oversimplify because it is, but hopefully we can find some common ground and mutual understanding through some of these simplifications. Divination. We briefly discussed that. I would like to, we have about 3 minutes left here, so I would like to, in our last 3 minutes, if we can expand a little bit more on divination and how divination is used by the ceremonial magician within the Golden Dawn construct.
Okay, we basically have three different types of divination. We have something which is called geomancy, which is working more with the earth spirits in divination. It's more akin to I Ching.
Okay.
In a way. And then we have tarot divination, and then we have, of course, astrology. So I would say that tarot is the most complex of the divination of the stars. It uses all, it uses astrology, and it uses, It is a development from a humantic divination also, but you create dots automatically, lines, and then you count it together and you have odds and evens and then from that you put together symbols. Composed of one or two dots in four levels.
Yeah.
And then you place those. You create more of those, and then you place them on the horoscope, and then the houses in the astrology, and then you make interpretations. So that is the first and basic kind of divination that you use. And then you go on into tarot and astrology.
Okay, and tarot, I want to, when, as opposed to how, if you were to go to some tarot reader in some shop or the street or whatever, oh, I just got the 90 seconds, I wanted, when you're doing tarot within the Golden Dawn, you call on guided. So you're calling on, because a lot of people they seem to, at least in my experience in the mundane world, if I decide I wonder if this person knows their stuff when it comes to the tarot, I find that they lack, it's their own stuff. They're not calling on the higher and then bringing it down, right? So that's part
Absolutely. We always invoke. We do an invocation, at least a simple invocation. We banish and we do a simple invocation, and we can also do a major invocation before the tarot reading. But also, which I must stress, that tarot is actually created as a tool to learn Kabbalah and Hermeticism. So that was what it was made for in the beginning. At least that's how we see it in the Golden Dawn. So it's. You have to have a thorough understanding of Kabbalah and of astrology in all those hermetic aspects of our tradition to actually do to understand tarot. And that, I think, is the major difference between a tarot reader in a supermarket and going to an initiate and have a tarot reading. The first thing is that he doesn't take any charge for it, and the second is that he has lots of he has all this philosophy that is behind tarot, with him, and he also invokes the highest names that he knows in his reading.
Well, we are out of time, and I do not know how much of that actually was said, but we will. Hopefully it's still recording. We will discuss this further. Thank you once again, Thomas, for being here.
Thank you very much.
And I look forward to talking with you once again. I hope everybody has a very blessed week. Until next time, this is your host, Julia Sheridan. This has been another edition of Hermetics and the Golden Dawn with David Griffin and other Golden Dawn adepts. Until next week, goodbye.